Today's gospel presents the growing popularity of Jesus. Large crowds gather from Galilee, from Judea, from Jerusalem, from the other side of the Jordan, from way over on the coast of the Mediterranean. He's really becoming quite a popular figure. Now, we know that at the same time, there's a growing opposition to his presence and his leadership and his message. That's not so prominent in this particular selection of the gospel, but we know how it is. As Jesus grows more prominent, the opposition also grows. Both human opposition, those the Pharisees, the leaders, sometimes also the civil officials, but also the spiritual opposition that does come up in today's gospel. The evil spirits feel obliged to throw themselves down before him and shout out his identity. So I'm not going to go more into this other than to point out this dynamic that happens when someone rises. There's always going to be opposition. It happens all the time. It's on display, especially in politics, but also in popular culture. When somebody gets to the top of the heap, someone is going to attack him or her. A rival, a so-called victim, a person who disagrees with the message and wants to discount the messenger, something. There's always going to be opposition. It's a human dynamic, and Jesus, because he becomes human, is subject to this. But God doesn't play this game. He's not out to rise up and put people down. He actually undercuts the whole dynamic by entering with humility, by introducing selfless love, which it's hard to see it as an enemy when somebody is there for your good, but it still happens. Okay, I just want to point out that dynamic because it's really on display in today's first reading, where we see the growing tension between David and Saul. Actually, not on David's side, but on Saul's side. And this is inevitable. Saul is the king. David comes along, and Saul has already disqualified himself, remember, as the chosen of God, because he's already set his will above the will of God in a number of cases, but especially in the case of the Amalekites. But here, David, who's chosen as his successor, comes along. He has defeated the Philistine and the Philistine army. So he's on the rise. He's not the king. He's nowhere near being king. In fact, he's a newcomer who just happens to be a great warrior. Saul is clearly the king. There's no doubt about it. No one thinks anything else. But after the defeat of the Philistines, the women come up with this little, what would you call it, a jingle, a little song. They're singing and dancing and playing tambourines and just rejoicing in the victory over the Philistines. And the song goes, Saul has slain his thousands and David his ten thousands. It's not a newspaper report about who killed who. It's a rhyme. So it doesn't have that much significance. It's a celebration song. I don't know if I could come up with an equivalent. It's like Jingle Bells. Jingle Bells, you sing it at Christmas time, but it has nothing to do with Christmas. It's just a happy song. That's all it is. It doesn't have much meaning. Okay. But it says, Saul was very angry and resentful of the song. He doesn't like it that David gets 10,000 and he only gets thousands. From that day on, Saul was jealous of David. Now you can see what's happening here. The song is just the occasion. But the real problem is in Saul. In Saul himself. It's not in the women who are singing. It's not in David. It's in Saul. The problem of jealousy. Yesterday I mentioned, because Jesus was angry in yesterday's gospel, and I happened to mention the right and wrong use of anger. In yesterday's gospel, Jesus was angry because the Pharisees refused to stand up for what was good. They refused to risk their personal advantage for the sake of the suffering man who had a withered hand. And Jesus was rightly angry at that reaction, angry at them, because they were clearly in the wrong. What did he do with that anger? He healed the man. He stood up for what was right. He did what was good and healed the man. Here, Saul is angry, but this is a different manifestation of anger. Anger is just an emotion, right? It comes. But when we get angry, we have to evaluate, why am I angry? And do I have a just reason for being angry? And then, what am I going to do with this anger? In the case of Saul, his anger comes from not perception of an injustice, but the perception of an insult, the perception of a threat to his position. It's connected to his jealousy. So if he were to stop and examine himself, he should say, yes, I'm really angry. That song really bothers me. That would be a right thing to do. Self-knowledge is part of discernment, right? Just having emotions is not discernment. And just acknowledging what they are is not discernment. But to evaluate how these emotions correspond to the truth and to the will of God, he doesn't do that. He doesn't say, this one really bothers me. Why am I so upset by this? Or maybe I'm the problem. That would be a legitimate step to take. But he doesn't do that. He lets anger, resentment, and jealousy take him over. And he discusses killing David with Jonathan and with all the servants. This is another step, by the way. Sometimes people are so angry that they lash out violently. It's not rational. You know, when someone flies into a rage, they might even kill someone. That's not first-degree murder. It's a person who's lost control of himself. But when a person can say, I'm planning to kill so-and-so, that is first-degree, because that means the person's freedom and free will are involved. It's not just being taken over by emotion. So when it says here that he discussed his intention of killing David, that means he's taken this in to such a degree that he's not just tipped off because he hears the song. He is determined to destroy his enemy, David. So it's a picture of human nature in its disorder. It's a picture of us, actually. We all have emotions. They come and go. Anger is one of the strong ones. And it can be destructive if we let it take over. But it can also be destructive if we take it as a motive for a course of behavior that we choose. That's what Saul does. Now, the dynamic here socially is the rise of David and, you would say, the experience of Saul thinking that David is a rival. David himself does not see himself as a rival. He's not part of this at this stage. The beautiful thing that comes out here, actually David is just a side figure in the story. The beautiful thing that comes out is the behavior of Jonathan. Jonathan, who is the son of Saul, is also the friend of David. So he's between Saul and David. Whose side is he going to take? If he takes his father's side, then he's going to be agreeing with his father to destroy David. If he takes David's side, well, then he has to betray his father. That's the way it looks on a human level. But Jonathan chooses something that is not simply one camp or another. He chooses to do what's right. And this is why I like to focus on this. Saul is in the wrong. David is the victim. Jonathan's in the middle. When you're in the middle, what do you do? Which side do you take? That's not the right question. Which side do you take? The answer or the right course of action is always to do what is right. Truth in love. Do the right thing. Do the will of God. No matter what anyone thinks of it. In this case, Jonathan doesn't take David's side against Saul. He takes the side of both of them. He does something that's good for both of them. He appeals to, first of all, he warns David, my father's about to kill you. You better hide for a while. Get off the scene. It's dangerous for you. That's a very loving thing to do for David. And the right thing to do. When someone's in danger, you take care of them. He also does the right thing to Saul by approaching him and reasoning with him. He takes the risk of addressing an angry man. Now, this is a good example for us because it's not easy to talk to angry people or to oppose them, because then you always take the risk of becoming a target of that anger. See this all the time. But Jonathan takes this risk and says, he doesn't say, you shouldn't do this or you're wrong. He says, why should you go against yourself? David has helped you. You were happy about it. This guy, David, is a great benefit to your kingdom. Why go against yourself and go against the Lord by trying to oppose David? You're harming yourself, my father, or your majesty. He calls him your majesty. You're harming yourself. And Saul, because he still has at least a little bit of good judgment, realizes, oh, you're right, you're right. And he heeds Jonathan's good advice and says, okay, I'm not going to kill David. It works. Now, we know later in the story of Saul and David, it doesn't work. But it doesn't work the next time. And Jonathan does get attacked by the anger of his father. But in this story, it works. And it was worth the effort, it was worth the risk. I'd just like to point this out because in the dynamic in the world where there's rivalry and there's jealousy and there's anger, it's not always easy to do the right things. Not always easy to see the right thing. But this is how discernment works. So pause, get self-knowledge, what's going on in me, what am I experiencing, and then listen for what God is doing and what's the right thing, and then make the decision based on what God is revealing. That's the right thing. And that's what Jonathan does here. So he's the hero of the story here and the example to us of how to deal with our own emotions and our own entry into the messy world of human affairs and human relationships. It's not to choose one person, another person, one camp, another camp, one party, another party. Choose the will of God. Choose what is right, what is good, what is true, and do that. Amen.